Harihi Om Sahana Vavatu Sahanao Bhunaktu Sahaviryan Karavavahai Tejasvinavadhitamastomavidvishavahai Om Shanti 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 Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sarigaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Sri Karabhajana continued, My dear Lord, you are the Mahapurusha, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and I worship your lotus feet, which are the only eternal object of meditation. Those feet destroy the embarrassing conditions of material life and freely award the greatest desire of the soul, attainment of pure love of Godhead. My dear Lord, your lotus feet are the shelter of all holy places and of all saintly authorities in the line of devotional service and are honored by powerful demigods like Lord Shiva and Lord Brahma. My Lord, you are so kind that you willingly protect all those who simply bow down to you with respect, and thus you mercifully relieve all the distress of your servants. In conclusion, my Lord, your lotus feet are actually the suitable boat for crossing over the ocean of birth and death, and therefore even Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva seek shelter at your lotus feet. Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur elaborates. This avatar generally teaches worship of Krishna and Rama to the people of Kali Yuga. Two verses glorify these forms. One should always meditate on this form. There is no rules about time or place. As a secondary result, he destroys the injury and insult caused by the senses, wife, and other material attachments. As a secondary result, he fulfills desires. He is the abode of all holy places. By meditating upon him, the results of bathing in all sacred places are accomplished. Therefore, one need not worry about the impurity caused by objects, place, and action in Kali Yuga, which are difficult to remove. Proper conduct is mentioned. Shiva and Brahma bow to him. He is easily served, and thus is the most worthy object of surrender. He is affectionate to his devotees, and thus relieves them from suffering. But he does not depend on the service of his devotees. O protector of those who bow down, he protects anyone who simply bows down with the thought of doing service, but does not actually do the service. He is the boat to cross material existence. And so it's just, the position of the Lord is then so special, that he's so kind to the devotees, or even those who even think about devotional service, or think about service to the Vaishnava, even they don't do it, he's still very kind to everybody. Right? So in Kali Yuga, all these things are very difficult to remove, but by remembering the Lord, surrendering to the Lord, then all this becomes possible. Right? Sri Karabhajana continued, O Mahapurusha, I worship your lotus feet. You gave up the association of the goddess of fortune and all her opulence, which is most difficult to renounce and is hankered after even by the great demigods. Being the most faithful follower of the path of religion, you thus left for the forest in obedience of a brahmana's curse. Out of sheer mercifulness, you chased after the fallen conditioned souls, who are always in pursuit of the false enjoyment of illusion, and at the same time engaged in searching out your own desired object, Lord Shyamasundara. Footnote 34. According to the Vaishnavacharyas, this important verse of the Srimad Bhagavatam is understood to describe Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Lord Krishna, and also Lord Sri Ramachandra. Because then it applies to all of them. So the aspect of Paravasta, the Supreme Lord in that kind of mood. And so we see that Radharani is only hinted at, and Lord Chaitanya also is only hinted at. Like that. They'll describe, but it will be you have to understand that it's about. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur elaborates. He gave up his beloved Lakshmi, who is more difficult to give up than the life heirs. Asu Dushtyaja, and whose faithful presence with her husband was desired by the Devatas. He went to the forest. Why? He went on the word of the Brahmana who tore his sacred thread while cursing him. May the happiness of your family life be destroyed. Footnote 35. Another Brahmin came to see the kirtan performance, but the door was closed, and he could not enter the hall. He returned home with an unhappy mind. But on the next day, he met Lord Chaitanya on the bank of the Ganges and spoke to him. That Brahmana was expert in talking harshly and cursing others. Thus he broke his sacred thread and declared, I shall now curse you, for your behavior has greatly aggrieved me. The Brahmin cursed the Lord. You shall be bereft of all material happiness. When the Lord heard this, he felt great jubilation within himself. Chaitanya Charitamrita, Adi Lila 17, 60 through 63. Right? Because the Lord anyway is not absorbed in material happiness. So, you know, then that's always a good thing. And then at the same time we see is then he'll go to the forest, he'll preach. Ramachandra went to the forest. You know, his whole pastime is basically about that. Yeah. He was the best among all persons following Dharma, and thus accepted the curse of the Brahmana, thinking, the word of the Brahmana should not go in vain, right? Because there's respect for the Brahmins. Going to the forest, what will he do? He sought out persons who were chasing the form of Maya, wife, sons, and wealth. He pursued men who were absorbed in samsara. Out of great compassion, Daitaya, he desired to touch such persons drowning in the ocean of samsara by embracing them, swabhi shitam, in order to drown them in the ocean of prema. This indicates Lord Chaitanya's causeless mercy, right? So he goes to the forest, then he goes and tries to catch all those persons who are in Maya and bring them to Krishna consciousness. Sri Karabhajana continued. Thus, O King, the Supreme Lord Hari is the giver of all desirable benefits of life. Intelligent human beings worship the particular forms and names that the Lord manifests in different ages. Those who are actually advanced in knowledge are able to appreciate the essential value of this age of Kali. Such enlightened persons worship Kali Yuga because in this fallen age all perfection of life can easily be achieved by the performance of Sankirtana. Footnote 36. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakura assigns verse 36 to Bhagavad Arkamrichimala, chapter 13, entitled Sadhana Bhakti, executed exclusively by taking shelter of the holy name. Aikantiki Namashraya Sadhana Bhakti, which is in the Abhideya section of the Thakura's book. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakura elaborates. Among the four yugas, which is the best? Those who know the quality of preaching through kirtan have accepted the best without the bad. Glorify Kali. How can they accept the best part of Kali when Kali is full of faults? Although it has unlimited faults, it also has unlimited good qualities. In Kali Yuga, everything attained in other yugas is attained by Sankirtana. It is said, whatever is achieved by meditation in Satya Yuga, by the performance of sacrifice in Treta Yuga, or by the worship of Krishna's lotus feet in Dvapara Yuga, is also attained in Kali Yuga simply by chanting the glories of Lord Keshava. Brihan Naradiya Purana 38:97. So that's the specialness, is because there's an ocean of faults, but let me see. Even if you correct those faults, then you'll have, you know, a very nice, pure person. But still, they're not a devotee. So even though, yes, in one context, that's very good, but that's not actually the purpose of the human form of life. It's to develop the understanding and relationship with Lord Vishnu. That's what you're trying to do. So then through the Sankirtan movement, then you can develop that attraction to the Lord, that attachment, that service to the Lord. So that full absorption in the Lord, like you see in Treta Yuga, that everything that you're doing is sacrificed and used in the service of the Lord, like in Treta, and the worship of the deity, and always being absorbed in that, in the Dwapara Yuga, that's all obtained by the Sankirtan movement. So by taking part in Lord Chaitanya's movement, you get all those benefits. So that's more special than simply it's an ocean of faults and, you know, hard to get rid of those faults.
Yes. Well, we glorify this because Sankirtan is easy, or because it's the sublime method.
But sublime can't be easy?
But what's the emphasis here?
Sublimeness.
Sublimity.
Sublimity. Okay, the sublimity. That's what's glorious. And it's easy. Why would it be easy? Because in Kali Yuga, people can't do things that are not very easy. You know, so it's made easy. Like that. Otherwise, they wouldn't do it at all. Yeah. So it's that's the most special thing. That's why demigods, others, then they're all, you know, trying, you know, glorifying to, and trying to take birth in this age, because the benefits are just so easily the benefit is so great and it's so easily obtained. These other ages, then they get a nice benefit, but you have to do more effort. But in Kali Yuga, you get the same benefit with less effort, so it's natural. Sri Kartabhajana continued, "Indeed, there is no higher possible gain for embodied souls forced to wander throughout the material world than the Lord, Supreme Lord Sankirtana movement, by which one can attain the supreme peace and free oneself from the cycle of repeated birth and death." The BBT purport states, "In the Skanda Puran, as well as in other Puranas, there is the following statement, Maha Bhagavata Nityam Kalau Kurvanti Kirtanam. During Kali Yuga, the great devotees of the Lord always engage in kirtan, chanting the Lord's holy name." Sri Kartabhajana continued, "My dear King, the inhabitants of Satya Yuga and other ages eagerly desire to take birth in this age of Kali, since in this age there will be many devotees of the Supreme Lord Narayana. These devotees will appear in various places, but will be especially numerous in South India. O Master of Men, in the age of Kali, those persons who drink the waters of the holy rivers of Dravida Desh, such as the Tamraparni, Kritamala, and Payashvini, the extremely pious Kaveri, and the Pratichi Mahanadi, will almost all be pure-hearted devotees of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vasudeva." Yeah, so this is special things, especially in South, you'll see that. It means North, they tend to be quite religious, but taking up the bhakti element, that may, you'll see, is more prominent generally in South. Like that. Pure bhakti, this is from Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. "Pure bhakti arising from devotee association is generally available in Kali Yuga, where there are many devotees dedicated to Narayan who desire only bhakti. Bhakti will arise by their association and thus will become prema bhakti." That is what is expressed here. The word cha indicates other places like Bengal. Okay, so you don't have to worry that you have to pack up and go south. So wherever there's devotee association, then that benefit will be there. Sri Kartabhajana continued, "O King, one who has given up all material duties and has taken full shelter of the lotus feet of Mukunda, who offers shelter to all, is not indebted to the demigods, great sages, ordinary living beings, relatives, friends, mankind, or even one's forefathers who have passed away, since all such classes of living entities are part and parcel of the Supreme Lord. One who has surrendered to the Lord's service has no need to serve such persons separately." Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur assigns verse 41 to Bhagavad Gita Kamichipmala, chapter 14, entitled Analysis of Unfavorable Conditions for Bhakti. Bhakti Pratikul Vichar, which is in the Abhideya section of the Thakur's book. Right? So it means there's no need in paying this debt to all these persons if you're already worshipping Krishna. So if you're worshipping Krishna and doing that, then it's unnecessary. Because for bhakti, if you're worshipping Krishna, then everything becomes taken care of. Everything is worshipped.
The supplies through the madhyamas also.
Sorry?
The supplies through the madhyamas also.
No, it just applies to devotees.
All devotees.
Yeah. There's no need. It means it's not a problem if you're in these positions and there's certain aspects that are there in the tradition, but you're doing it in connection to Krishna, so you're not separately worshipping them. It's all part of just worship of the Lord. You're not worshipping the Lord and then doing all these, worshipping the demigods and this and that. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? It's not a separate endeavor. You worship Krishna, then everybody is worshipped. So you technically don't have these things to take care of. You know, you just deal with whatever is there. The demigods go, then the point is, since you're worshipping the Lord, then the universal order is there. The great sages, you're following the order of the spiritual master, and so that then is the paying the debt to there. Ordinary living beings, so you're seeing everyone in connection to Krishna, you're doing things in connection to Krishna, so that's already being taken care of. Relatives, friends, mankind, or even one's forefathers. Forefathers, then who's the forefather of all them? They all go back to the Prajapatis. Prajapatis go back to Brahma. Brahma goes back to Vishnu. So you're worshipping the Pita Maha. Right? You know, the one who's beyond them all. So there's no need of these separate aspects. You know, you do your duties and everything like that. You deal with family and friends properly. But one's not dealing with them because of the pious benefits one gets from that. One is simply performing one's service to Krishna. Hmm? Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur elaborates. This verse shows that bhakti is devoid of the troubles caused by daily and occasional duties, such as shraddha rites and tarpanas. Apta refers to those who give nourishment, such as mother and father. Devatas refers to the devatas of the five sacrifices. One involved in karmas is the debtor and servant of the devatas, sages, living beings, parents, and pitris. He daily performs the five sacrifices for them. Footnote 38. The sacrifices are Deva Yagya, Bhuta Yagya, Brahma Yagya, Nri Yagya, and Pitri Yagya. They're all part of that's what's there. And there's also the connected with these are also the five sins that are there in the household life. So they're taken care of by this also.
What's
tarpana? Tarpana. When you take the water and offer. So they do water to the, you know, tarpana to the forefathers or the devatas or like this. After you're bathed, then you have to offer. Mm-hmm. So we'll just offer the Ganga or offer to Krishna and like that. So. Even if you don't, it's fine. Smriti says, Parikshinam nri nartam karma karayet. One should perform karmas for destroying debts. That is not so for the devotee who has surrendered completely to Mukunda. It is just like a person who, on being accepted as the servant of the emperor of the earth, cannot be the servant of the ruler of a province. This person has given up all prescribed varnashram duties, kartam, or has given up all distinctions. Right? So, either he's not following that, he's just chanting and all that, but the point is that he's following the Vaishnav etiquette, so then you're going to deal properly with everybody. So what's the whole thing for? You're respecting, you're performing your particular duty within the social or spiritual system, right? That deals with all this. Now, if you're just chanting, and that, then you're not part of this system. It's just the Lord, how He takes care, then that's what you do. But etiquette is there, so you deal with all living entities properly and everything like that. Because someone who can do this, then they're advanced. They're on the Uttama platform. So then being on that platform, then they're already, whatever it is the others are trying to obtain, they already have. So then there's no further endeavor there. Does this make sense? Yeah. And yes, or has given up all distinctions. Even if he's functioning within the Varnashram, he's not making distinction of, oh, this is good for me, this is not. This is, they're just looking at it, how is pleasing to Krishna. So then you're following all those duties in connection with Krishna. So it doesn't matter whether one stays within this social system and sees everything connected to Krishna, or is outside of it, seeing everything connected to Krishna.
Whereas these 5 personalities, one involved in karma is debtor and servant of devtas, sages, parents, pitris and living beings. So living, others are quite clear, how is servant of living beings? One who is doing karma, why is servant of living beings?
Because they take care of so many things. Have you ever heard of Balidan?
Okay.
Right? Because they're taking care of everything.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just like in your doorway, Vastu is taking care. That's where he sits. And so your whole thing that is going nicely because Vastu is taking care of that. And so there's all kinds of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Like that. Or you heard of, what is it? Vishvadeva? Vishvadeva. Mm-hmm. No.
Comes in the mantras. Only heard. It comes in the mantras.
Yeah, it means that it's the whole, it's all the work, that all the stuff that goes along with the Buddha, that Buddha, not that, what do you call it? What did I call it, say before?
Vastu.
No, before that.
Balidan?
Yeah, Balidan. So it's a whole ceremony, and that's part of it. So then, that's a very, you know, important part of the, you know, the daily the householders have to perform that. So every time they cook, you know, like this, you know, the proper meals, then they do this. So I think it's done, I'm not sure if it's once or twice or 3 times a day. But there's all these places all around the house, everything like that. So that's all the living entities. Plus, even you look at beyond that, you have, why is it, okay, you want to drive to Calcutta. Why is it you can drive to Calcutta?
Driver is there.
Driver is there, so he's another living entity? Okay. And what is he driving in?
Some vehicle.
Vehicle. Where'd that come from?
Somebody's
made it. And what are you driving on?
Wheels.
Okay. Someone's made the wheels also. And what are the wheels driving on?
Earth.
Okay.
No.
Okay. Yes. So, how is there a road? People are doing, people are arranging, government people, the local people, the guys are working, the business guy who, you know, made the contract, you know, the ministers who approved it, you know, the government's like this. It's just, you're able to function in society because so many other living entities are performing their duties, and because of that, you have facility. You know, so there's the gross like that, there's the subtle ones, there's the forefathers, like you're born in a family, but why is your family there? They had to have, you know, parents, they had to have parents. So like that, there's forefathers. Right? The demigods, they're controlling everything, the sages have given the scriptures, so you're getting benefits simply because you're following the rules of the scripture. Like that. So that, this is what's going on. We'll just think it's all about us, but the point is who's arranging all this? It's not us. So that's why then we owe to these people. Does that make sense? When one worships Vishnu, all worship of devatas and pitris is accomplished as is stated elsewhere. Quote, by giving water to the root of a tree, one satisfies its branches, twigs, and leaves. And by supplying food to the stomach, one satisfies all the senses of the body. Similarly, by engaging in the transcendental service of the Supreme Lord, one automatically satisfies all the devatas and all other living beings. Srimad Bhagavatam 4:31-14. Right? Because all these things are Krishna. They're just different parts of Krishna. You know, it's his energies and all this and that. And we see in the material world, then he expands as the universal form so that everything can be accomplished in within the universe. So that means whatever we're dealing with is him. So if we're worshipping him, then it's already accomplished. Like if I deal with you, talk to you, do I need to talk to your little toe separately? And now, what would you think if you're there and I, you know, I come and I ignore you and then get down on the ground and that and start talking to your little toe? And then the big toe wiggles, no, I'm not talking to you, I'm talking to the little one here. Or wait your turn, you know, I'll get around to you. But, you know, so if you talk to the person, you don't have to talk to the toes. Right? And that's the whole point. You upset the person, then you end up talking to the hand, right? Like that. That's how it works. Yeah. The Lord Himself has said, one should continue to perform the Vedic ritualistic activities until one actually becomes detached from sense gratification and develops faith for hearing and chanting about me. Srimad Bhagavatam 11:20-19. So that's a bit ahead of here. That's in Uddhava Gita then.
Yes.
So the whole point is that why it says here, this person has given up all varnashram duties or has given up all distinctions. So you're performing the activities, but they're being done for Krishna. So you're not doing them because of material considerations. And one should be considered to do these activities until one becomes completely freed from any interest or identity with the material energy. Right? So the idea is you regulate, then that pulls back your interest in the material nature. Thus, the devotee has far surpassed the qualification for karma. Right? And this is just beginning devotees. Right? They're not obligated, let alone those who are more advanced. Footnote 39. When your intelligence has passed out of the dense forest of delusion, you shall become indifferent to all that has been heard and all that is to be heard. Srimad Bhagavatam 2:52. Right? So anything on the material platform, you're not worried about it, what you've heard, and you're not really interested in what could be heard. Okay. But for one who takes pleasure in the self, whose human life is one of self-realization, and who is satisfied in the self only, fully satiated, for him there is no duty. Bhagavad Gita 3:17. Sri Karta Bhajana, we understand? So we have to understand here is that it's an understanding that includes all of these things. Because otherwise we've heard about how you engage everything in Krishna's service. So whatever your position, we've also heard that one is giving up all material considerations and all positions and endeavors. So the point is depending upon your level of consciousness, then it will be applied from working with the material energy without attachment and doing these things for Krishna, or not even having to really worry about the material energy at all. But in any case, the proper etiquette and culture and all that's going to be there because that's the nature of the devotee. So because of that, even though they aren't seemingly following the Varnashram rules, the purpose of the Varnashram rules they've already followed. Does that make sense? So they're nice because they're a devotee. They're respectful because they're a devotee. All these things are happening because they're a devotee. Is that... Yeah? Otherwise, others are doing it because it's the rule, and if you do it, then you'll get some material benefit, and if you don't, then you're going to suffer. That's why they're doing it. Right? So you can't say, oh, but that's material, so we won't follow it, and then not be absorbed in the Lord. Right? Because technically, if you can, those who can function without could engage it. But they don't have a need to engage it, and so they don't. But someone who needs to engage it, but they don't, then that is the material akarma. Where you're not performing your duty, so you're not getting any of the benefits. But if you don't follow Varnashram, but you're not situated on this transcendental platform, then you don't get the benefit of following Varnashram. Same time as then, how do you regulate yourself and keep yourself out of, you know, improper activity? How do you regulate yourself to see that you're always serving Krishna? Does that make sense? Just like, let's say, for example, what's the motive for reading? Why would we read?
Interest.
Some interest. Okay, but what if the interest is not there today? We don't read. So it's not a duty. Right? So now, because we have a natural attraction to hearing the name, form, qualities, and pastimes of the Lord, therefore we'll always be reading when we can. Then there's no need of a rule, because when you can, you will. Right? But if we just say, oh, that's just rules and regulations, we're above, then we're only reading because whenever we feel like it, which won't be regular. Right? So then it's regulated, that is part of Swadhyaya, which is one of the five parts of deity worship. So it's part of your sadhana to read. Does that make sense? That's the whole idea. So that's why then the rules and regulations are there, to make sure that we do all these things that we should do spontaneously, but we don't. Right? In other words, if you're not functioning on the Bhagavat platform, then you have to function on the Pancharatra. Right? Does that make sense? That's the... Sri Karabhajana concluded. Didn't he just conclude? Continued. Oh, okay. I thought he said concluded. No. He's always been saying continued.
Chamas.
Sorry?
Chamas was another Navayoginda.
Oh, okay. Yeah. He concluded. Okay. We're on the next of the brothers. Sri Karabhajana concluded. One who has thus given up all other engagements and has taken full shelter at the lotus feet of Hari, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is very dear to the Lord. Indeed, right, all other engagements means you only engage in devotional service. So that can mean you're not following any of the duties of the Varnashram because you're only absorbed in the Lord in direct activities. Or it can mean that you're given up doing any of those things for anything else other than pleasing the Lord. So even you're using Varnashram or any of the 20 forms of religion, you're only doing that to please the Lord. That's giving up all other activities. Right? It doesn't mean you do nothing. Does that make sense? Yeah. Indeed, if such a surrendered soul accidentally commits some sinful activity, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is seated within everyone's heart, immediately takes away the reactions to such sin. Footnote 40. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakura assigns verse 42 to Bhagavad Arkramichamala, chapter 12, entitled Devotional Service in Practice, Sadhana Bhakti, which is in the Abhideya section of the Thakura's book. Right, so, in other words, the devotee surrendered to Krishna is so special that Krishna is always taking care. You don't have karma. Right, so here, it's taken away. Krishna has taken away the reaction. But it doesn't mean that you don't, if there's a need to be taught something, it's not that some form of opportunity for learning won't arise. Right? Does that make sense? Why in the Veda is a particular thing defined? It means you have an activity that's there, let's say a pious activity, then you get a benefit, and impious, you get a punishment. So, is there a connection between these? Right? You know, just like, let's say, someone steals grains. What happens to them? Next life, what do they become? A rat, yeah. Because what does a rat do? They just steal grains. No, there's no grains, okay, they'll steal your soap. But if there's grains, they're not going to touch your soap. You understand? Because they're grain stealers. Right? And it's not they come and nibble in this. They take and haul it off like that. Does that make sense? They won't just come and eat a little bit and walk away. No, they'll how much they can get into their place, they will. Farmers have said that previously on this side where they had all the grains, all the rice, is that if they bump into a rat hole, And they dig it up. There's 40 kilos of grain inside. Right? And they're very nice to come and, you know, the top of the grain, it's all connected. You know, and that, they'll just bite off that top and get and stack it all nicely. You know, it's not like a mess all over the place where you're walking and tripping all over like stuff. No. Right? So they, you know, they take, they plan, they stick it like this. They plan. So there's a connection there. Does that make sense? So that's the whole idea, is that in action and reaction, there's connection. Does that make sense? Like that.
So you're the gross reaction.
It's not that you let's say, drop the carton of milk and it hits the floor and bounces back up into your hand without even moving, but your pet hamster dies. No, the hamster's okay, the milk spilt on the floor. Because you spilt the milk. Right? Does that make sense? So, therefore, the correction, it's the same set of corrections. It's just whether it's happening by the modes of nature or whether Krishna's arranging it. So if the attitude is corrected, then what's the need of reaction. But if it's not, then why wouldn't there be a reaction? And to the degree that it's there, then that's the degree of the reaction. Does that make sense? So, but Krishna's taking care, yes.
Morning time, you said something about a certain level, we start thinking and pay reaction for thinking. Which
is that's in Satya Yuga. That's in Satya Yuga.
Ah, Satya Yuga.
Because they're so controlled of their mind that even sinful thoughts in their mind, they'll get the reaction for it. But in Kali Yuga, you don't have that. If you did, then we wouldn't probably have any people. We'd just have little piles of ashes. People would be walking down the street and would just go out there, they'd just self, you know, immolate right there. You know, then the other guys walking by will snicker and go, ha, that'll teach you. And then they're the next ones, right? Yeah, so. It's Satya Yuga. Kali Yuga, fortunately, that's not. If you do the activity, you'll get the reaction. But if you simply think it, you don't. Mm. Right? Good, no? Yeah. Yeah, it's his arrangement. Right?
Not rectified, it will come in action.
What?
The mentality is not.
If you don't correct it with time, it will come to action. But it's only when it comes to action that you'll get the reaction. It's not that you won't become contaminated, but you won't get a reaction. Does that make sense? Yeah. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur elaborates, having negated all prescribed karmas, now the sage negates atonement for committing sinful acts. Right, because they'll say, okay, yeah, the karma. But, you know, this guy did wrong it, you understand? So when you have that, some will say, oh, we don't need to do all this, but then, you know, these guys deserve a reaction for their misconduct. No, that's not balanced. It means if you're getting rid of the good karma, you're also getting rid of the bad. So devotional service will remove the good, it will also remove the bad. They go together. Does that make sense? Yeah. That's why I said only if someone's so fixed in following all the rules to detail, if they criticize that someone's done something wrong, it's not correct, but at least they're in a position to make the statement. Does that make sense? Yeah. A person who has given up the thought of obligation to worship the Devata should not have a tendency to commit sin. Right? Because if you're going to give that up, you have to be absorbed in the Lord. If, however, by illusion this happens, the Lord destroys the reaction. One may say, but it is seen that masters punish their servants when the servants commit sin. The Lord should also punish his servants, right? As long as it's someone else other than yourself. The devotee will not be punished because he is dear to the Lord. That is the Lord's great quality, Paresha. One may say, does the devotee not perform worship to destroy sin. The Lord is situated in the heart of all beings. The Lord, with his inherent powers, does not depend on the devotee having to request this. Right? The Lord takes care of this. It's not only if the devotee asks. Right? Footnote 41. Srila Prabhupada writes in this connection to, in his purport to Bhagavad Gita 9.31. Generally, a devotee who is engaged in the nine kinds of devotional activities is engaged in the process of cleansing all material contamination from the heart. He puts the Supreme Personality of Godhead within his heart, and all sinful contaminations are naturally washed away. Continuous thinking of the Supreme Lord makes him pure by nature. According to the Vedas, there is a certain regulation that if one falls down from his exalted position, he has to undergo certain ritualistic processes to purify himself. But here there is no such condition, because the purifying process is already there in the heart of the devotee, due to his remembering the Supreme Personality of Godhead constantly. Therefore, the chanting of Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, should be continued without stoppage. This will protect a devotee from all accidental fall downs. He will thus remain perpetually free from all material contamination. So if we're always absorbed in the Lord's service, always in hearing chanting about the Lord, always associating with advanced devotees, then one will, there'll be, basically one won't have any problems. But even if one does, because of that commitment to this, then that's the point. Does that make sense? So we have to be very careful is that if we find that we're not necessarily, absorbed. And so when something goes wrong, then it's only when something, a reaction happens that therefore we respond and become Krishna conscious. We shouldn't think that that's the rule for everybody. Right? If it applies, it will apply, but Krishna will take care. So that's why for the devotees there's no prayaschitta. It's a matter of what will be the best Krishna conscious situation. Does that make sense? You know, it's just like, let's say someone has a problem with money. Then you put them in a situation where they don't deal with money. But they're engaged in devotional service. But if you say, oh, they had a problem with money, then throw them out. How do they get purified? Right? Isn't it? Now, let us say, okay, leave the temple for 2 years. Okay? Now, they come back after 2 years. So now, in your mind, are they purified? No. So then what is the use of that prayaschitta? It was simply a waste of Prabhupada's, Krishna's, and everybody's time. Because it did not purify the living entity, it didn't give them more faith. Your authority in giving the prayaschitta doesn't do anything. You understand? So it's a matter of seeing that they're engaged in service. So even if the situation they're in or the place they're in is a cause of distraction, then they should be situated in a place that will not be a distraction in which they can do service. Now, if the person just doesn't want to and they want to go, that's their choice. Does that make sense? So in other words, they just move from one service to another. You just find that situation, that association, that will purify. Does that make sense? If they can't take advantage of it, and by being in that situation they'll disturb others, then that's another thing. Then they have to go find some other place. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. Like that. But it's not that the prayaschitta that you come up with is purifying, because no one's ever satisfied that the person has become purified. So then what was the point? Right? So then it's not prayaschitta, then you know, it's just some exercise in futility. Right? So one has to see that it's devotional service. So here, the devotee themselves who contemplates this, understands what's wrong, is trying to therefore correct themselves. There is no need of anything. And if there is anything, Krishna will take care. Does that make sense?
then before taking decisions, you know, in such cases, we require that the uttamas must be involved. Otherwise,
the uttamas must be involved.
Yes, they only see in this Krishna conscious way. Otherwise,
they see, madhyamas can see that way. You know, also the shastra gives explanations. So we see here is that there's that we're not worried about those things. You just know where the weaknesses are, where it comes up. So if someone always steals Mahaprasad, give them a service where they're not near to where the Mahaprasad is. You know, but if you have them cleaning the you know, pujari room, and they steal the Mahaprasad, maybe have them clean the basement or something. Right? So that's the whole thing. You know, not that they can't walk up the stairs and come to the pujari room, but you know, it's less difficult. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Cooking in the kitchen would work out better.
Sorry?
Cooking in the kitchen would work out better. Always cooking so much that he loses the interest.
Oh, I see. Okay. Yeah,
more than cooking, he could wash the utensils in the kitchen.
He could wash the utensils. Mm-hmm. The point is it's some service. The heart's purified by service, not by non-service. Because we somehow or another think that akarma means the material concept of akarma is powerful. So I didn't do anything about it. So therefore, I'm not supporting it. Right? Does that make sense? I don't do anything for cows, but I don't drink milk. Therefore, I've done so much. Right? You know, so you have this kind of a concept. So one has to see that what we're meaning is that the concept of non-performance of any duties, how is that going to purify? It's performing those duties to please Krishna. So in other words, whatever situation will cause them to be more Krishna conscious, that's what you want. That comes by association, that comes by service. So
Krishna consciousness is the only solution.
Krishna consciousness is the only solution. Yes. No matter what's wrong, Krishna consciousness. You know, it's like having one medicine that cures all diseases. You know, so it's good. So in other words, always being absorbed in service, that will, as Prabhupada says here, protect a devotee from accidental fall downs. Thus you will remain perpetually free from all material contaminations. You're absorbed in Krishna consciousness, then you won't do anything wrong. Verses 43-52. Nard concludes his teachings to Vasudeva. Nard Muni said, having thus heard the science of devotional service, Nimi, the king of Mithila, felt extremely satisfied. Oh, okay. Because always before it was called, what was it called?
Videha.
And now it's Mithila. So it's the same, has so many different names, all these places.
Because one of Sita's names also Vaidehi?
Vaidehi, yeah. The king of Mithila felt extremely satisfied and, along with the sacrificial priests, offered respectful worship to the sagacious sons of Jayanti. So these are Rishabdev's sons, right? So then another name for Rishabdev is Jayanti. The perfect sages then disappeared before the eyes of everyone present. Right, just in case you had a doubt whether they were special or not. But you see, occasionally they do that and it's specifically mentioned. Also then when the sages came down and brought the Pandavas for the first time to Hastinapur, then they came, they said what was there, who they were, and what was all that, and then, you know, arranged that everybody understood all that. And then when they were finished, then they all just disappeared. They didn't walk off, they didn't fly off, they just disappeared. You know, because it makes a strong statement, so then, you know. King Nimi faithfully practiced the principles of spiritual life he had learned from them, and thus he achieved the supreme goal of life. O greatly fortunate Vasudeva, simply apply with faith these principles of devotional service which you have heard, and thus, being freed from material association, you'll attain the supreme. Indeed, the whole world has become filled with the glories of you and your good wife, because the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Hari, has taken the position of your son. My dear Vasudeva, you and your good wife, Devaki, have manifested great transcendental love for Krishna, accepting him as your son. Indeed, you are always seeing the Lord, embracing him, speaking with him, resting with him, sitting together with him, and taking your meals with him. By such affection and intimate association with the Lord, undoubtedly both of you have completely purified your hearts. In other words, you are already perfect. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur elaborates. A Nityasiddha devotee will identify as Krishna's father, Vasudeva. A Nityasiddha devotee with identity as Krishna's father has an eternal body like the Lord. But by the will of the Lord, he becomes submerged in longing for rasa in bhakti. Thus, Narada, seeing Vasudeva absorbed in the mood of an ordinary person, teaches him as if he were an ordinary person, right? But they're a transcendental person, eternally transcendental, Nityasiddha, and they are, in the spiritual form. But they take this mood. Narada makes him happy by praising Vasudeva's good fortune in 6 verses. Narada Muni continued, inimical kings like Shishupal, Pandrika, and Shalva were always thinking about Lord Krishna, even while they were lying down, sitting, or engaging in other activities. They enviously meditated upon the bodily movements of the Lord, his sporting pastimes, his loving glances upon his devotees, and other attractive features displayed by the Lord. Being thus always absorbed in Krishna, they achieve spiritual liberation in the Lord's own abode. What then can be said of the benedictions offered to those who constantly fix their minds on Lord Krishna in a favorable, loving mood? So if those with a non-favorable mood are always absorbed in Krishna, and they'll get liberation, it says, in the Lord's own abode. It means they'll go first to the Brahma Jyoti, and then they'll eventually get to the Lord's abode. So what can be said of those who actually have that affection for the Lord? They're always thinking of him in affection. So even more great wonderfulness, right? Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur elaborates, Vasudeva may be thinking, but thinking of the Lord as one's son gives rise to obstacles, since we see that as parents we offended the Lord. Therefore, Narada says, no, that is not so. Even those who become absorbed in Krishna with hatred become successful. What to speak of those who serve him with devotion? Those who thought of Krishna's form with its movements and glances, but not its sweetness, while lying down or sitting, attain sayuja or surupya, samyam. How much more the devotees will attain? There is no possibility of offense for those devotees, right? So they're absorbed in the Lord, but not in the aspect of the sweetness, the relationship. They get this benefit. So what about those who do have that relationship, do have that aspect of thinking of the sweetness of the Lord's activities? Does that make sense? That's different. That's the taste in it. Right? And the relationship with the devotees. We're not talking about the overall mood of Aishwarya or sweetness. Right? That can also be there. But Narada Muni concluded, so there's no offense for them because they're always absorbed in the Lord. Narada Muni concluded, do not think of Krishna as an ordinary child, because he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, inexhaustible and the soul of all beings. The Lord has concealed his inconceivable opulences and is thus outwardly appearing to be an ordinary human being. The Supreme Personality of Godhead descended to kill the demoniac kings, who are the burden of the earth, and to protect the saintly devotees. However, both the demons and the devotees are awarded liberation by the Lord's mercy. Thus, his transcendental fame is spread throughout the universe. So they all get liberation. It's just that then beyond that is what you get for the aspect of prema. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur writes, the Lord appeared to kill the kings, who are a burden to the earth, to protect the devotees and to give pleasure to both by giving sayuja to the demons and prema to the devotees. Thus the Lord cannot be accused of being biased or hateful. Sri Sukadev Goswami continued, having heard this narration, the greatly fortunate Vasudeva was completely struck with wonder. Thus he, and his most beloved wife, Devaki, gave up all illusion and anxiety that had entered their hearts. Anyone who meditates on this pious historical narration with fixed attention will purify himself of all contamination in this very life, and thus achieve the highest spiritual perfection. Right, so we see Sukadeva's telling Parikshit Maharaj the story of Vasudeva and Narad Muni, who's explaining the story of Nimi and the Navayugendras. So you have the first that goes into the second one, that goes into the third. Third one ends, then you go back to ending the second one, then you go back ending the third one. Oh, excuse me, the first one. Yeah? So it's just... So, I say, Vyasadeva has a style of writing like this. So we can understand this must be the Lord's style, since Vyasadeva is Vishnu. Yes.
By writing like this, actually, along with the narration or the content, we know how to adopt the mood to hear.
Yes. Yes, the mood, you see, example, it goes very nicely.
How they are receiving the things.
Like I remember that somebody brought up, they brought up a question. Now this question, this devotee has brought up, I've heard them bring up this point, you know, dozens and dozens of times. Generally, at lunch. And so then, they were there, Jananivas Prabhu was there. And so it's always about pizza. The pizza's so good, how can there not be pizza in the spiritual world? Right? And so that's always the question. It might be worded differently or like this. So then, going from this kind of narration style, then I said to him, it says, yes, it's a very, very interesting point. And this came up in a conversation, you know, long, long ago. And when this was asked, the great sage, then he answered in this way. And I said what Jananivas Prabhu said. You know, he had said that, yes, the Lord does eat pizza in his Sankirtan pastimes. Because he's here, and so it's being offered here by devotees, he's eating, and so he does eat. You know, maybe Mother Jashoda doesn't cook pizza, but he's eating it, you know, here in these pastimes. And so that was like in 98 or something. So that was, you know, a few years ago. So then, that would have been farther back, not 98, probably like 88, yeah, would have gone, yeah, so like 30 years, so it means, yeah, so then, because I explained it in this way and used this style, and then when I revealed that he had asked the question, you know, I gave the scenario where it happened, and I said, you know, like this. And then Jananivas Prabhu had answered. Then somehow or another the conversation stopped there. Everybody was happy. Otherwise, it's one of those that just goes on for, you know, half an hour until something else catches your attention. Right? So the style is very good. It gives context to things. People understand context. You get the different moods. So in one story, you get the mood of Narad Sukadeva to Parikshit, then Narad Muni to Vasudeva, and then Nimi to Navayugendras. Yeah. So you get all those, and you get the different nuances that are there, the subtleties, the differences. Instead of trying to tell one story that has everything in it, like that, you have all these stories within stories within stories. And then, so, yeah.
And basically, Shukadeva Goswami is explaining Parikshit Maharaj, like about how you have Narada and Vasudeva, the conversation. So then, obviously, it's very natural that Narada is very busy, so that authority has to be accepted. And between the Narada,
yes,
and
that's good.
Navayugendras are still more senior. So then,
yes.
That's how it's descending, you know, the seniority.
Yes, yeah, because then you get the aspect of the parampara, you know, authority. Yes. Mm-hmm. Conclusion. One who has faithfully applied the principles of devotional service, as described by the Navayugendras, becoming free from material association, will attain the Supreme Lord. So material association means actually with people and all that, or it can mean associating on that material platform, right? Or it can also mean just giving up that perspective of seeing things in a material context. So if you see it just in connection to Krishna, you've given up all material association. You know, you always associate devotees, you've given up material association. Those who are ignorant but humble are, on account of their very ignorance, special candidates for the mercy of great souls. The members of the other three varnas, becoming fit for achieving the lotus feet of Hari by second birth through Vedic initiation, nevertheless become often confused by concocted interpretations of the Vedas. Presuming themselves to be great scholars, they become greedy for fruitive results and ridicule the devotees of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. They are fixed in family life, attached to mundane gossip, and indifferent to the devotional service of Vishnu and the Vaishnavas. To become disentangled from such life in all respects is the principal teachings of the Vedas. Because you're trying to reverse that. You're trying to become attached to the devotional service to Vishnu. Giving up, you know, always hearing and chanting about Krishna. Right? And performing one's duties in connection to serving Krishna. So you're fixed in devotional service, not fixed in family life. Right? Does that make sense? So, yeah. Real wealth is the real wealth is that conductive to the faithful execution of the duty of the soul, not that which exists simply for selfish sense gratification. Right. Opposed to Lord Vasudeva, ignorant self-cheaters completely carry out their own ruination and enter into hell. Right. So we're starting to see these, you know, the real definitions. Like that. These are then what it is. So real wealth is what's conducive to faithful execution of the duty of the soul. So real wealth is what is valuable in serving Krishna. Does that make sense? That's then what we're supposed to do. So we'll see as it goes on, it'll give what real piety is. Mm. All these different things.
Even liberation.
So real liberation. So, yes. So this canto you can call the really real thing. Right. On the other hand, persons who give up all false ego and take full shelter of Lord Hari are no longer debtors to the demigods or anyone else. The personality of Godhead, Sri Hari, appears in the hearts of devotees who know no other shelter than him and causelessly drive away all evil desires from that devotee's hearts. Even by meditating upon Krishna in the spirit of enmity, such kings as Shishupal attained an equal status to him. So, to attempt to say anything more about the perfect achievement of great souls such as Vasudeva, who enjoy intimate loving relations with Krishna, would be a useless endeavor. So, we see by meditating on Krishna, even in the spirit of enmity, they attain a status equal to Krishna. But through bhakti, you attain a status greater than Krishna. So we're not actually interested in being a status equal to him. Right? Like but it's not that we're greater, we're servants of those who are greater. Right? Because Krishna is submissive to his devotees, so that puts them in a greater position. So we're the servants of such devotees.
You said that we as devotees will be trained and
it's within the material world. It's not spiritual.
It is spiritual, where Lord's pastimes are happening.
The Lord's pastimes are happening everywhere.
We will be trained there, and then we can go to Goloka Vrindavan.
But Goloka and Gokul are the same.
In the spiritual world.
Yes. So that's why I was asking, because you kept saying about the material world. So it's on the spiritual platform. So the point is there you have the opportunity to see spiritual and material. Well, in Goloka, that's not there. That's not present. So once one has no interest in the material, then whether you're in the Gokul or Goloka pastimes, it doesn't matter. Like that? Does that make sense? So the Golok Leela, the Boma Leela are the same. They're the same place. Just that Goloka Leela has descended to down to here. So it's the same place. Is that what it is?
But I wanted to ask that these souls who are envious, how they get trained to enter into spiritual world?
Because if you're liberated, then when you think of activity, then you've seen the Lord, interact with the Lord who's fully transcendental. So in that pure state, you can tell the difference between transcendental activity, you know, the Lord and transcendental activity, and the material world and mundane activity. So you'll choose the spiritual, and so you'll go back to Godhead. But you'll go to Vaikuntha, because it's a generic. There it's just everyone's worshipping the Lord. But those who then think of in specific loving relationships, they'll go to that specific place. So, yeah.
Jiva Goswami quotes this very specific verse to prove how the process of bhakti is independent of anything else. Those who are absorbed in law in an inimical way also getting the same benefit. So that proves bhakti is independent.
Well, whether you follow the rules or not, whether you have affection or it's enmity, then bhakti is separate.
Absorption, being absorbed in Lord, that is what is getting you liberated from all the material.
Right. It's amazing. I didn't. I say the. I say the peace of liberation. It's as simple as a switch. As soon as you turn, they go, yes. So you see how here you're taking different purports or different verses and that and putting them in order so that by reading it, that the flow of it, it's making all the points, but at the same time it flows and makes a presentation. Right? That's the form that Bhagavad Akramichi Mala is in. That's why sometimes in here, the context of it keeps switching. And so sometimes it makes obvious sense, and sometimes it has less obvious sense. Right? Because in the Bhagavad Akramichi Mala, it'll have that context. So then you have to see what's the heading that's there. Like you say, those are favorable for devotional service. Then you look at the verse. It says, you know, the devotee doesn't get involved in this. So you think, no, that's about the negative, but that's the positive, is that they don't get involved. Does that make sense? So you see the context. Yeah? No? Sometimes, yeah.
Maharaj, in this chapter, many times this quote came from exclusively taking shelter of holy name.
Yeah, exclusively.
So that means like when they're chanting...
You want to take exclusively... It means... generally you chant the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, but occasionally just, you know, to bring up the bhav, you chant Kal Ho Na Ho. Huh? You don't know that one. You have to ask those authorities that do know.
So we don't miss any.
Yeah, so don't miss out on the inspirations. Right? Or do you just chant Hare Krishna? Yeah, so that's exclusively taking share of the holy name. Yes? That's the whole point.
And then we are chanting and having full faith in the holy name and we are absorbing, cultivating that sort of...
Yes, because in other words, what is the whole point in life? Is to be absorbed in Krishna, serve Krishna. So it's exclusive. That's the whole point that one's trying to get to, that exclusivity. So when it comes to that exclusivity, then you can actually take part in the Lord's pastimes in a direct way. Before that, you can be part of the pastimes, but you're not directly interacting because it's not just about Krishna. It's about Krishna and something else. So when it's only being done just for Krishna, then that's when everything works very nicely.
Even not caring for what benefits we get, only how to please the Lord.
Yes. Yes. So it's, what do you call it? Yes. It's about, you know, the glories to you know, the Sankirtan movement, right? That's that. Does that make sense? So that's where the affection is that, not the dil hai Hindustani. Right? Yeah? No? He watches more of the Andran stuff, I guess. Okay, chapter 6. No? Okay, the Yadu dynasty retires to Prabhas. Okay, so this is the last chapter before Uddhava Gita. Okay. Wow. Okay, chapter 6. The Yadu dynasty retires to Prabhas. Pratigya. By incarnating within the Yadu dynasty, Krishna performed the highest welfare work for the entire universe by displaying his transcendental pastimes, right? Because welfare is supposed to benefit someone. And that means it's not necessarily that they've done something to deserve it, they're getting the benefit. Right? Does that make sense? That's what welfare is for. If they're supposed to get it and you give it to them, how is that welfare? Right? It means that the person's wasted food their whole life. Next life, they're born in some place where there is no food. So then people that do welfare work will then provide food for them. Technically, they don't deserve it. They've wasted food. Right? But you're doing that welfare. You're benefiting them, though they don't have the facility. Right? So the greatest benefit is then to be absorbed in the Lord. And so the Lord performs pastimes that attract the minds of everyone within the universe. So then that's the highest welfare work for the entire universe. Right. Is that
so? The prakata pastimes show compassion on everybody, whether one is qualified or not.
The prakata pastime, yes, yes, okay. Yes, because the whole universe sees. In the sixth chapter, the Lord is praised, Adhyaya Prakashika. In the sixth chapter, the Lord is praised by Brahma and others. Understanding that the Lord desired to disappear with his dynasty, Uddhava, dear to the Lord, made a request to Krishna. Sardartha Darshini 11.6.1. Okay, so this sets the scene for the Uddhava Gita. So this is the Sunday. Okay. Desiring to see Sri Krishna's human-like form, which enchants all the worlds, the Gandharvas, Apsaras, Nagas, Rishis, Pitas, Vidyadharas, Kinaras, and other demigods, all headed by Brahma, Shiva, and Indra, arrived at the city of Dwarka. Covering the body of Krishna with flower garlands from the Nandana gardens of heaven, they praised him with statements about his transcendental power and quality. Right, so what's going to be pleasing about these flowers and garlands from Nandana gardens of heaven?
Fresh.
Fragrant. They're fragrant. They're fresh.
Beautiful.
Beautiful.
The best available for the
demigods. Best available for the demigods.
And
so that's the thing, is that they're offering the best that they have. So they're getting from the Nandan gardeners, so it's the best. They look the nicest, they smell the nicest, you know, everything's perfect about them. But it's not the flower itself, because guaranteed in Goloka they're better. Mm-hmm. So the point is that they're making the effort to offer the best. It's not that they all came down here and then someone goes, "Hey, did you bring the garland?" "Oh, I didn't bring it. I thought you were bringing it." You know, like that. You know, that someone else thought they were bringing it. Like that. "Yeah, but he's not even here. I don't think he's..." Like this. And then they go down to the local flower shop and then they get something. Right? So, you know, they're taking the best and offering. So it's that offering that the best they can do and offering to Krishna. That's what's pleasing to Krishna. Right? They praised him with statements about his transcendental power and qualities. All living entities, right? So they're going to see that because they have power, but his is transcendental. They have qualities, but his are transcendental. So then the areas they work in, they're connecting that, the things that they have, you know, in their facility, they're offering that. So then, yeah, and just them being demigods is always a bit more fancy than what we come up with. All living entities, beginning with Brahma, are subordinate to Lord Krishna. Krishna creates the universe by empowering his expansion, Mahavishnu. Although Krishna creates, maintains, and destroys this world through his material energy, he remains transcendental to the material energy and perfectly self-satisfied. Even in the midst of his 16,000 queens, Lord Krishna is undisturbed. Performers of fruitive sacrifices and yogis desiring mystic power contemplate the lotus feet of Lord Krishna to attain their materialistic objectives. But the most elevated devotees who desire liberation from the bondage of material work lovingly contemplate the Lord's lotus-like feet because those feet are the fire that destroys all desires for sense gratification. One cannot actually purify the mind by ordinary worship, penance, and other such processes. You can do, they may get you some piety, but they won't purify the mind. Right? Because otherwise we see Hiranyakashipu went out and did amazing austerities, but it didn't purify the mind. Or even we just saw earlier in the book, Vrikasura. Like, I mean, that's really severe austerities. But it doesn't purify the mind. Right? So it's only that by the devotional service, that purifies the mind. It creates the devotional piety and purifies the mind. While others, well, they may give you benefits, but it doesn't purify the mind. So you still have the same material desires. So now they may happen to be more pious, but at other times they can be less pious, and so then one doesn't have the facility. So it's unsteady. One can purify the mind contaminated by sense gratification only through mature faith in the mode of goodness, which arises by hearing the glories of Krishna. Therefore, intelligent persons situated in the Varnashram system serve the two kinds of holy places, the nectarian rivers of the topics of Krishna and the nectarian rivers flowing from the Lord's lotus feet. By incarnating within...
Krishna Katha and service to Krishna.
Yeah, that's there. You can also say the Ganges or the devotees, because Padasevana means serving the devotees, what's connected to Krishna. So about Krishna and about what's connected to Krishna. By incarnating within the Yadu dynasty, Krishna performed the highest welfare work for the entire universe by displaying his transcendental pastimes. Simply by hearing and chanting about these pastimes, pious persons in Kali Yuga can definitely cross over the ocean of material illusion. When the Lord had fulfilled the purpose of his descent, and the Yadu dynasty was facing imminent destruction from the Brahmana's curse, the Lord desired to wind up his pastimes. When Brahma prayed to the lotus feet of Lord Krishna for the deliverance of himself and all other demigods, Sri Krishna revealed in his reply that after the destruction of the Yadu dynasty, he would return to his own abode. Observing terrible disturbances indicating the imminent destruction of the world, Lord Krishna called together the wise members of the Yadu dynasty and reminded them of the Brahmana's curse. The Lord convinced them to go to Prabhas Tirtha, where they could save themselves by the performance of ritual bathing, charity, and so on. The Yadus, in obedience to Krishna's desire, prepared to journey to Prabhas. Right, because this kind of pastime, it wouldn't happen in Dwarka, so it happens outside Dwarka. So it makes sense. You know, it's like Amara, right, the heavenly planets. No one dies in the heavenly planets. Right, you die outside. So it won't disturb the mood in that in Dwarka, but the pastimes have to be wound up. The Yadus, in obedience to Krishna's desire, prepared to journey to Prabhas. Upon seeing and hearing the Lord's conversation with the Yadu dynasty, Uddhava approached Lord Sri Krishna in a secluded place, offered him full obeisances, and, with folded hands, expressed his inability to tolerate separation from the Lord. He begged Krishna to carry him to his own abode. If one tastes the nectar of Krishna's pastimes with his ears, one loses all hankering for other things. Persons who engage constantly in Krishna's service while eating, sporting, sleeping, sitting, etc., cannot tolerate separation from Krishna. They honor all kinds of remnants from Sri Krishna, and thus conquer the Lord's illusory energy. Peaceful members of the renounced order attain Brahma Loka. after exhaustive and painful exertion, whereas the devotees of the Lord simply discuss Lord Krishna among themselves, chant and remember his various pastimes and instructions, and thus automatically cross beyond the insurmountable material energy. So the renounced order, by great penance, austerity, and all that, after a long time, they may attain Brahma Loka, but they don't get out of the material world. But the devotees, simply by discussing Krishna consciousness, is so nice, they cross over the material world. So, definitely a better process. Shloka Anushanam. Summary of verses 1 to 32, the demigods headed by Brahma visit Dwarka. 33 to 50, the Yadu dynasty retires to Prabhas. Verses 1 to 32, the demigods headed by Brahma visit Dwarka. Sri Sukadev Goswami said, Lord Brahma then set off for Dwarka, accompanied by his own sons, as well as by the demigods and the great Prajapatis. Because his sons are, you know, of them who are Prajapatis or Prajapatis, because otherwise Narad, the four Kumaras, Shiva, they're not Prajapatis. But the others, then they're Prajapatis. But besides them, there's another, because that means that he has 10 sons, so 3 are not. So then that means 7, so now you have 12 more that are from that, because I think you have, what is it? 7, no, you have 17 or 19? No, 21? You have a few more Prajapatis than Brahma's sons. Lord Shiva, the bestower of auspiciousness to all living beings, also went, surrounded by many ghostly creatures. The powerful Lord Indra, along with the Maruts, Adityas, Vasus, Ashwinis, Ribus, Angiras, Rudras, Vishvadevas, Sadyas, Gandharvas, Apsaras, Nagas, Siddhas, Charanas, Guhyakas, the great sages and forefathers, and the Vididharas and Kinaras, arrived at the city of Dwarka, hoping to see Lord Krishna. By his transcendental form, Krishna, the Supreme Lord, enchanted all human beings and spread his own fame throughout the worlds. The BBT purport states, the personality of Godhead descends within the material world to assist the demigods in the cause of manifestation. Thus the demigods can normally see such forms of the Lord as Upendra. However, here it is indicated that although accustomed to seeing various Vishnu expansions of the Lord, the demigods were specifically eager to see the most beautiful form of the Lord as Krishna. Because the others, he's coming for a specific function. And being the Lord, he's always going to be attractive and wonderful. But the form of Krishna, that's special even amongst all the avatars. Sri Sukadev Goswami continued, the Lord's glorious glories destroy all contamination within the universe. In that resplendent city of Dwarka, rich with all superior opulences, the demigods beheld with unsatiated eyes the wonderful form of Sri Krishna. The demigods covered the Supreme Lord of the universe with flower garlands brought from the gardens of heaven. Then they praised him, the best of the Yadu dynasty, with statements containing charming words and ideas. The demigods began to speak. Our dear Lord, advanced mystic yogis, striving for liberation from the severe bondage of material work, meditate with great devotion upon your lotus feet within their hearts, dedicating our intelligence, senses, vital air, mind, and power of speech to your lordship. We demigods bow down to your lotus feet. O unconquerable Lord, you engage your illusory energy, composed of 3 modes, to unleash, maintain, and devastate the inconceivable manifest cosmos, all within your own self. Right? So it's all within himself, but it's all outside himself. That's the fun part. As the supreme superintendent of Maya, you appear to be situated in the interaction of the modes of nature. However, you are never affected by material activities. In fact, you are engaged directly in your own eternal spiritual bliss, and thus you cannot be accused of any material infection. O greatest of all, those whose consciousness is polluted by illusion, cannot purify themselves merely by ordinary worship, study of the Vedas, charity, austerity, and ritual activities. And so by religious activities, you can't actually purify yourself because it won't have an effect on getting rid of material desire. That's the actual purification. Maybe you move up through the modes, but the problem is you won't get rid of material desire. Our Lord, those pure souls who have developed a powerful transcendental faith in your glories achieve a purified state of existence that can never be attained by those lacking such faith. Great sages desiring the highest benefit in life always cherish your lotus feet within their hearts, which are melted by love for you. Similarly, your self-controlled devotees, desiring to cross beyond the material kingdom of heaven to achieve opulence equal to yours, worship your lotus feet in the morning, at noon, and in the evening. Thus they meditate upon your lordship in your quadruple expansion. Your lotus feet are just like a blazing fire that burns to ashes all the inauspicious desires for material sense gratification. Footnote 42. Kaladmar similarly prays, O my Lord, best of the givers of benediction, if you at all want to bestow a desirable benediction upon me, then I pray from your lordship that within the core of my heart there be no material desires. Srimad Bhagavatam 7:10-7. Because that's the real benefit to get from the Lord. There's no material desire. One has a natural attraction to Krishna. That's the benefit. Getting rid of sin, getting rid of that. No, because if you have that attraction to the Lord, you have no material desires, then what's the problem? Because the reactions of sin, that's not actually the big deal. Right? The problem is material desire and being distracted from the Lord. That's actually the point. Those about to offer oblations into the fire of sacrifice, in accordance with the Rig, Yajra, and Sama Vedas, meditate on your lotus feet. Similarly, the practitioners of transcendental yoga meditate upon your lotus feet, hoping for knowledge about your divine mystic potency. And the most elevated pure devotees perfectly worship your lotus feet, designed to cross beyond your illusory energy. O Almighty Lord, you are so kind to your servants that you have accepted the withered flower garland that we have placed on your chest. Right? And this is, from Nandankana, and they're still. Since the goddess of fortune makes her abode on your transcendental chest, she will undoubtedly become agitated, like a jealous co-wife, upon seeing her offerings also dwelling there. Yet you are so merciful that you neglect your eternal consort Lakshmi and accept our offerings as most excellent worship. Right? Yeah. O merciful Lord, may your lotus feet always act as a blazing fire to consume the inauspicious desires within our hearts. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur elaborates. You consider the withered garlands offered by your dedicated devotees to be superior to most attractive Lakshmi. This is your affection for your devotee, right? Because it's about bhakti. So that she's the goddess of fortune, that's not the attractive point, the attractive feature. It means her devotion, that's attractive. So because her devotion is so great, everyone's following her in serving in devotion. But just because she's Lakshmi, the goddess of fortune, that's not attractive to Krishna. It's all his. Lakshmi competes like a co-wife with a withered garland. She thinks, the withered garland resides on the Lord's chest where I reside. Not interested in Lakshmi, you think, I cannot give up the withered garland since it has been offered by my unalloyed devotee. You accept the offering attentively, prepared with devotion. That the garland competes with Lakshmi is an appearance only, since no one can actually compete with Lakshmi. And because her devotion is unequaled. But the point is, it's because she's the goddess of fortune, that's not why he's attracted. That her devotion is greatest of everybody. That's the attraction. So that's her special position that others won't have. Yes? No? Follow me, Mash? No? Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Premier.